Monday, July 22nd. Today in Cuba, the Havana Conference of the 21 American Republics begins, and Secretary of State Hull is expected to sound the keynote of hemisphere cooperation this afternoon. In Europe, the British admit the loss of a destroyer and the probable loss of a submarine. Meanwhile, Europe awaits talks by Foreign Secretary Viscount Halifax today and Prime Minister Churchill tomorrow. Both are expected to be answers to Adolf Hitler's speech of last week. But now the news from Europe, London and Berlin, and afterwards an analysis of the news by Elmer Davis. First, the British capital and the report of Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Constant practice seems to be improving the aim of Britain's anti-aircraft gunners. Two and probably three German aircraft are believed to have been brought down by anti-aircraft guns early today during raids over a southwest town. Last night's raids appear to have been isolated and few German aircraft were involved. Bombs were dropped in one district in the Midlands and in another on the northeast coast. The official communique states that little damage was done and no one was seriously injured. Last night, the Admiralty announced that the submarine Salmon was overdue and must be presumed lost. This morning, the loss of the destroyer Brazen is announced. It is stated that the Brazen received damage during an attack by enemy aircraft and subsequently sank while being towed into port. And there was no loss of life. There is no indication of the Brazen's position when she was bombed, and it is not stated whether the bombs fell from German or Italian aircraft. Piecing together the various reports of air attacks against surface craft, particularly merchant shipping, one gets the impression that considerable damage is done by heavy bombs which score what are called near misses. The concussion of several near misses is apparently sufficient to open up a merchantman and cause her to sink. For the last few weeks, a quiet battle has been going on between the Ministry of Information and the British press. There have been those who wanted to tighten up the censorship restrictions and compel the newspapers to submit everything before publication. The newspapers have won the argument. The present system of voluntary censorship is to be continued, and there will be no further restrictions upon the expression of opinion. The publication of information likely to be useful to the enemy is, of course, still banned. But it has been agreed that newspapers publishing such material will now be prosecuted by the Ministry of Information rather than by one of the fighting services. The explanation given is that the fighting services are too busy with other things. And the Ministry of Information will increase the number of people detailed to study the newspapers and magazines in search of possible violations of defense regulations. London newspapers continue to find evidence of increasing tension between Germany and Russia. There are reports that Tscherno and Ribbentrop, during their talks 10 days ago, agreed to make a joint demarche to Moscow, demanding that Soviet policy should be immediately clarified. The Balkans correspondent of the London Times states that on July 6th, the railway station at Minsk, where the Russian oil is transferred from the broad-gauge Soviet tankers to the narrower German ones, was partly destroyed. The correspondent states that 16 Soviet tankers crashed into a German train. A fire was started. Part of the station burned, the damage being so great that the Minsk freight yards are now useless. It is pointed out here that Dr. Goebbels has not yet made any serious attempt to explain how Russia's encroachment on Germany's self-proclaimed sphere of influence can be explained away as a victory for the Berlin-Moscow alliance. Most of today's London papers report that Stalin has sent King Carol a note stressing the desirability of a, quote, popular government, unquote, in Romania. The hard-pressed Romanian king is said to be seeking advice again from Hitler and Mussolini. The Bulgars, impatient for the return of Dobrogea, are reported to be thinking that their demands may be obtained more quickly by leaving the Nazi orbit and siding with the Soviet. But despite all these reports of increasing tension between Germany and Russia, informed opinion in London does not anticipate any immediate clash between Germany and the Soviet Union. Haile Selassie, Emperor of Abyssinia, is now in Khartoum, and it is expected that strong efforts will be made by Britain to encourage revolutionary activity in Abyssinia. Lord Halifax is to broadcast tonight, when he is expected to give Britain's official reply to Herr Hitler's Reichstag speech. That speech by the German leader does not appear to have damaged Britain's determination or her sense of humor. A columnist in today's Daily Telegraph says, Hitler's speech has prompted the suggestion that he sleeps in a nightshirt made of the Versailles Treaty, pinned together with an umbrella and a cigar. I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Here is the Press Association dispatch from Rome. An official communique asserts that a British battleship and two British cruisers were severely damaged during airplane warship fights between July 8th and July 13th, and that the crews of the ships suffered heavy losses. From Vichy, France, it is reported that Finance Minister Boutier and his staff leave for Paris today to reestablish the ministry in the German-occupied capital. It will be the first government bureau to return to Paris. The Post Office Department also goes to Paris. Now we return to Europe for more news. News reported this time from the German capital by William L. Shara. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. It has been pretty much of an open secret in Berlin for some time now that the German government considered the Roosevelt administration's support of Great Britain as one of the prime reasons for the British refusal to consider peace, for the British determination to fight on to the bitter end. When London reacted with such speed and determination to Herr Hitler's Reichstag declaration last Friday evening, there were many here who thought that it was largely due to President Roosevelt's speech to the Democratic Convention the night before. I mean, that was the German view. Today, for the first time, one of the leading newspapers in Germany, the Frankfurter Zeitung, comes out in the open, and in a front-page editorial signed by the editor-in-chief, Rudolf Kircher, accuses Mr. Roosevelt of bearing a heavy responsibility should the war continue. Until recently, the German press has been very reserved about American affairs. But this article today gives the German attitude towards President Roosevelt with great frankness. Mr. Roosevelt, the Frankfurter Zeitung argues, is, quote, the father of the English illusions, unquote, about this war. The president, the paper goes on, must share a heavy responsibility if, as the German editor puts it, the appeal to reason really ends in the destruction of England. The Frankfurt paper then discusses the president's recent broadcast to the Chicago Convention and finds that Mr. Roosevelt, quote, openly admitted that for 7 years he has agitated against the National Socialist right, unquote. The editor continues, quote, it may be that this arrogant tactic of Roosevelt's is even too much for the Americans. It may be that he will not be reelected. It may be that if he is reelected, he will stick closely to the non-intervention program of his party. But it is also clear that while he may not intervene with his fleet or his army, he will intervene with his speeches, with intrigue, and with a powerful propaganda which he will put at the disposal of the English. End of quote. Without this war help, the Frankfurter Zeitung goes on to argue, Churchill's position in regard to his own people and in regard to America would be much weaker. Without the president's help, in other words, this German paper thinks that Hitler's Reichstag declaration might have more of a chance in Britain. As I said, this is the first time that a German paper has come out so frankly in blaming Mr. Roosevelt for the British attitude, or to put it another way, blaming the president should the war continue. The Berlin press is much more reserved on the question. For example, a Fürkische Beobachter this morning contents itself with republishing the remarks of Signor Gaida on Mr. Roosevelt, in which the Italian editor declared that the president's broadcast, quote, was not worthy of a statesman, unquote. The Fürkische Beobachter adds no comment of its own, though its Rome correspondent fully approves the Italian position in regard to Mr. Roosevelt. The leading front page headline in the Sofortblatt this noon says, the whole world has understood, only England won't listen. And most of the front pages of the Berlin press this morning are devoted to that point of view, repeating also a line that was taken in yesterday's German papers, namely, that Mr. Churchill is exercising a dictatorship over British public opinion, which has not been given a chance to really consider Herr Hitler's peace offer. It was explained in the Wilhelmstrasse this noon, however, that after Mr. Churchill has spoken tomorrow and received the approval of Parliament, and there are no illusions here that he will, that Berlin will then consider that an answer to Herr Hitler's declaration, an answer not only from Mr. Churchill, but from the British people. That does not mean that the attack on England will start on Wednesday morning or anything like that. There seems to be no hurry felt here about beginning the final phase of the war. Some people here even think that peace may still be obtained before hostilities really begin. This is Leonel Sharer in Berlin, returning out of Columbia, New York.
This is New York again. In our studios is Elmer Davis, who has heard these reports from London and Berlin. Mr. Davis will now analyze the news.
You would think from the expressions of the German papers and from the statements made by authorized German spokesmen to American correspondents in Berlin that it is quite inconceivable to the Germans that there might be some people in England and elsewhere who would rather be dead than live under the sort of rule that the Germans give the conquered countries. Well, now, of course, the leaders of the German government know this perfectly well. They are much smarter men than you would suppose from some of the statements in the propaganda they give out. This is just a position which they find it convenient to assume because the whole theory they've been taking from the date of Hitler's speech on Friday is that it's nobody but Churchill and the plutocrats and the war profiteers and the stock exchange gamblers that don't want to accept the Führer's offer to surrender, that the British people would be glad to accept it, but that this ruling plutocratic clique is continuing the war. And they appear or profess to be holding back in the hopes that the British people will overthrow the Churchill government and make peace. Now, it seems unlikely that there is any such expectation in the really higher circles in Berlin. Dr. Goebbels and Hitler both are much too intelligent to expect anything like that. When they say that time must be given for the real British reply, they probably mean that time must be given in the hopes that possibly a few more Englishmen may be weakened a little bit and softened up so that the German attack will meet perhaps less vigorous resistance than it might mean. Mr. Sharer pointed out both yesterday and today that there seems to be no hurry about the preparations for attack, that they're taking their time about it. Nevertheless, the good weather in which an attack by boat across the channel would be possible will hardly last longer than the end of September. That is still a long way off. It's a matter of some 10 weeks, but it's likely to be a large job. And if it's going to be done, it will have to be started fairly soon, it would appear. Unless, of course, the Germans have confidence that they'd be able to overthrow England as promptly as they were able to overthrow France. And in view of the fact that any troops to effect a lodgment in England in considerable numbers would have to be brought over by some sort of sea transportation, that seems a little more difficult. Nevertheless, they're keeping up this story that it's only the Churchill government and the plutocrats, and now, as you heard Mr. Sharer report a little while ago, it's Roosevelt who has the heavy responsibility for the continuance of the war. Roosevelt is encouraging the English, and if it weren't for that, they would no doubt give in. Well, the Germans might well look around at the nations in Europe that have given in to Hitler, either without a fight or after a fight, and see if their prospect is so good as to encourage the British to surrender. The Czechs gave up their defenses in September 1938 on Hitler's promise that he had no interest in the Czech state at all thereafter. 6 months later, he took it under what he called his protection. And that protection is perhaps slightly less severe, but not a great deal less severe than the regime which the Germans have enforced on Poland, which was conquered in war. Protection seems to include the reorganization of Czech economy to correspond with German economy, which means to a considerable extent the looting of the country of food and other articles of value, the reorganization of industry so that it will be merely subsidiary to German industry, and the imprisonment, or in some cases even the execution, of the leaders of the people who might organize any national sentiment. We don't know much about what's going on in Denmark, but all the indications are that a Danish government is going to put in, which will be entirely satisfactory to the Germans. Consequently, it would seem quite intelligible if the British, backing up a government in which the Labour Party is as powerful certainly as any other party, and possibly the most powerful of all, if the British people would feel, looking over Europe, that the situation of the countries that have surrendered to Hitler is not very satisfactory, and that it would be worthwhile hanging on and fighting to the end.
And with the news thus analyzed by Elmer Davis from New York, Columbia concludes another broadcast of important world developments, reported from London by Edward R. Merrill and from Berlin by William L. Shirer. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.